Good afternoon, and welcome to From Where We Are, stories of news and culture with a USC focus. From Annenberg Radio News and the USC Annenberg Media Center, I'm Miranda Myers.
And I'm Hala Oscar. We are live. It's Thursday, November 1st, 2018. On today's show, midterm elections, a proposition that may affect factory farming, and a new Los Angeles housing project. All that and more from where we are.
The 2018 midterm elections are next week. But as the constant barrage of get out the vote reminders continue, not everyone feels that they are part of the process. Now Yaninka Kapoor reports.
Jacqueline Tan is the only international student on the Undergraduate Student Government Senate. She's passionate about politics and its impact on our community and the lives of everyday people. But what's it like when you live in the U.S., are immersed in politics, but you can't vote?
International students generally feel disconnected from American politics, or it's really easy to not care because it's not our country, it's not our politics, it's not our issue to deal with. Unless you're a poli-sci major, there's no real outlet for people to learn about the political sphere unless they ask people.
Almost a quarter of the USC student body is international students, and about 35% of the Los Angeles population is from abroad. While their lives are affected by American politics, many often don't know how to engage in a process they can't participate in. Tracy Navichoke, Director of Membership and Development at the LA World Affairs Council, is working to make it easier for people to get involved.
We do present these forums for discussion where we present information and we hope to get people engaged based on facts and experienced academics and specialists in the field. So I think just having the conversation is important and being aware of what's going on. It motivates people.
Tracy believes that voting is not the only way to stay informed.
You get a lot of things in the mail that say vote for yes for Prop 6, no for Prop 6. So I think a lot of those things can be misleading. And even if you are not a citizen, it still affects you. And even if you are far away from home, those things still affect you. So in general, I think that it's good to be informed, to ask the questions, and to act as if you were voting.
Back on campus, similar efforts are taking place at USC. Alec Vandenberg is with Trojan Advocates for Political Progress. He says it's important to focus on our similarities instead of our differences when encouraging people to get involved.
I think relating some of the common struggles that we have maybe as college students, maybe kind of based off of our own demographic breakdown, based off of our gender or our race, I think those issues transcend the status of your citizenship in this country.
With Election Day next Tuesday, the message is clear. No matter what your voting status, there's a place for everyone when it comes to shaping our future. For Annenberg Media, I'm Nainika Kapoor.
Next week, Californians will vote on a proposition that sets new minimum space requirements for veal calves, breeding pigs, and egg-laying hens. It might sound like the end of factory farming if the proposition passes, but as Claire Heddles reports, it's not that simple.
At Yokeland Farms in Yucaipa, chickens roam free. Some roost in piles of dirt. Others peck at a head of lettuce.
We actually have 99 hens and one rooster.
Roger Gibson is the farmer who runs this place. And to him, these chickens are more than egg producers. He treats them like pets.
Well, this is Silky. You can tell she's a happy little chicken. She's got no stress. Right? Oh, you tell them.
Silky and all chickens in California could be affected by next week's vote. Proposition 12 mandates a minimum of 1 square foot of space for each egg-laying hen. The Humane Society is sponsoring the initiative. Here's Josh Balk, their vice president of farm animal protection.
Prop 12 prevents the confinement of baby veal calves, mother pigs, and egg-laying hens in tiny, filthy cages where they can barely move an inch.
For many animal rights activists, this sounds promising. Lindsay Laris from the Animal Legal Defense Fund says Prop 12 doesn't fix things right away, but it's a step in the right direction.
And this new initiative is trying to get every hen to eventually be in a cage-free environment. It is a process. It will take a few years to do that. We have to allow farmers to sort of make accommodations in order to do that.
But opponents of the proposition say it will not improve hens' lives at all. Bradley Miller is a national director of the Humane Farming Association. He represents a group fighting Prop 12 called Californians Against Cruelty, Cages, and Fraud. Miller says that contrary to what people think, if it passes, Hens will still be confined to very small spaces, not what you imagine when you hear cage-free. He says that behind this proposition is a trade group representing the egg industry.
It's as plain as day that the large egg factories are the main beneficiaries of this, that they co-wrote it, and it's United Egg Producers guidelines that are going directly into California state law. They want to put the pre-existing guidelines of the Egg Industry's National Trade Association, and whether they're in or out of a cage, they would be only getting 1 square foot per hen.
United Egg Producers certifies 85% of eggs produced in the U.S. A representative for the United Egg Producers said in an email that they aren't granting interviews on the measure or taking a position, even though the proposition refers specifically to its guidelines. One cage-free farm in California that is certified by the United Egg Producers has 2 million hens in a multi-tiered facility. Farms like this would still be legal, even if Prop 12 passes. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals is a loud voice opposing Prop 12. Ben Williamson is PETA's Senior International Media Director.
We can't be selling animals so short by setting such a terribly low bar as Proposition 12 does.
Back at Yolk Glen Farms, the chickens move freely in and out of the hen house, with lots of room to roam, eat vegetables, and drink water as they wish. Roger Gibson, the farmer here, caresses a hen in his lap.
I think Prop 12 is definitely headed in the right direction. I really think that, you know, keeping anything pinned up is horrible. You know, when you go in the market and you see a nice dozen eggs that are nice and chilled, you don't think twice about where that actually came from. You know, and having chickens, we think about that a lot.
Supporters like Gibson hope it's a step toward better conditions for farm animals, but opponents say consumers are being misled about what cage-free would actually look like. For Annenberg Media, I'm Claire Heddles.
With elections less than a week away, candidates around the country are working tirelessly to raise money in all kinds of ways. One candidate in Irvine has been using an unconventional method, and some people are not too happy about it. Sasha Urban has the story.
Almost every day, candidate for Irvine City Council David Che drives his 86-year-old mother to nearby Laguna Beach. He drops her off in a busy part of town where she sets up shop in her wheelchair. She takes out a sign that reads, "Please help me," and panhandles. She has even been seen defecating on a public bench, outraging local residents. The LA Times reported on Che and his mother in 2016 and confirmed that they are not homeless. Police in Laguna say there is nothing illegal about his actions. But that hasn't swayed angry Laguna business owners, one of whom has even made a sign that she displays next to Che's mother telling people not to donate. Laguna locals are also trying to ban panhandling in general. Che's candidate statement says he holds a degree in business administration from USC. He ran unsuccessfully for mayor of Irvine in 2016 and has been involved in a number of lawsuits. Che has not publicly commented on the recent allegations. Che says he is running for city council to help residents achieve the American dream. And though the election is now less than a week away, he has yet to finish setting up his campaign website. For Annenberg Media, I'm Sasha Urban.
California's Secretary of State and Attorney General held a news conference in advance of Tuesday's election. Annenberg Media's Jiajun Chen reports that they spoke not only of the importance of voting, but of protections Californians have for their right to vote.
Election Day is Tuesday, November 6. We have heard many voices saying how important it is to vote. However, it is also important to know that California citizens have certain rights regarding voting. California Secretary of State Alex Padilla spoke today about the California Voter Bill of Rights.
A reminder for people who must work on Election Day. California voters have the right to pay time off from work on Election Day to be able to cast their ballot. So if your schedule makes it difficult to get to the polls before your work shift or after your work shift, you have the right to take some time off of work without losing pay to be able to cast your ballot. We hope that these collections of rights and resources get us to the point where there is no excuse. We all have to vote, especially in the politically charged environment that we find ourselves in. This election is critical.
Another provision in the California Voters' Bill of Rights is that you have the right to election materials languages other than English. At the news conference, Padilla and then Attorney General Javier Becerra spoke both English and Spanish.
We believe when we say nuestro voto es nuestra voz, our vote is our voice, is power. So we're making sure that every eligible Californian has a chance to make his or her voice heard and counted on November 6th. On election day, a team of more than a dozen attorneys from the Attorney General's office, along with our administrative staff, will be standing ready to support the Secretary of State and his team until the last poll close on election day.
Voting day is coming soon. And if you have any questions, beneath the Voter Bill of Rights online is a toll-free number to call for help or to report election fraud or misconduct. For Annenberg Media, I'm Jiajun Chen.
The H-4 EAD is a work permit granted to a certain category of non-immigrants, may soon be revoked by the Trump administration. Hafsa Fathimi spoke with an H-4 visa holder about the possibility of losing the right to work.
On most evenings, Samir Ravi throws together a few Indian snacks for tea.
Yeah, this is called masala vada. It's made of chana dal, and we add a lot of spices.
It's part of her daily routine as a homemaker, a life she never imagined for herself. Ravi is in California on an H-4 visa, a dependent status granted to spouses and children of H-1B foreign guest workers. Most of them are employed in tech and STEM fields.
Then I got married and my husband got opportunity in US, so we decided to move here.
In India, she was a qualified software engineer. When she first moved to California, her visa didn't allow her to work.
Yeah, it was really difficult time for me. I was totally empty. I started losing self-confidence and I was getting depressed.
Ravi and her husband had a baby, and that helped her cheer up a little bit.
But still, the same thought runs in my mind. Every morning when I wake up, same thing will be running. What am I going to do for the whole day?
According to data from Immigration Services, Indian women are issued the highest number of H-4 visas. The Director of Faculty Staff Visa Services at USC, Joseph Elias, says that H-4 visa holders aren't allowed to do any kind of paid work.
Let's say I'm an H-4 spouse and I wrote a book in the United States. I couldn't receive royalties because that would be considered unlawful employment in the United States. I'm really very restricted to what my development of myself, the development of my career.
In 2015, the Obama administration announced a new law for H-4 visa holders. It allowed spouses to seek work permits after a certain stage in their green card processing had been approved.
It was a good break for us. We decided, it's really good hope. I can start working.
However, the Trump administration announced earlier this year that it would rescind the work permit for H-4 visas.
It's not fair. For whatever I studied so much, we put so much effort. It's such a big competitive world.
If the work permit is revoked, her family may move somewhere else, even back home to India.
It's too much compromising on ourselves. Sometimes I feel instead if we were back in India, we both would have worked and we would have led a very happy, luxurious life.
The tech industry in California is driven heavily by foreign talent. Elias cannot say what will happen if foreign workers leave, but says that visa crackdowns leave immigrants with less reason to stay.
As you can imagine, this makes the prospect of staying in the United States for your green card, if you're a foreign worker, especially from India or China, unattractive. Why on earth would I wait here for the next 13 years without my spouse being able to work?
Ravi received a work permit in February, but in mid-September, the Department of Homeland Security announced that it would rescind work permits for H-4 visa holders by the end of the year. Across the country, women like Ravi hold their breath. For Annenberg Media, I'm Hafsa Fatima.
The city of Los Angeles wants to build 6,000 housing units along the metro line in West LA. As Nicole Farage reports, not everyone is on board, and now a nonprofit advocacy group has filed a lawsuit against the city.
An Metro passenger Kyle Apuna relies on the Western Expo Line to get to and from work every day.
Proximity to the metro station is something that I look for in housing. It's something I look for in my work as well. And so I really appreciate the Expo Line.
He says it's an added convenience he wouldn't want to give up.
I do really consider how far it takes, how long it takes for me to get from my house to the station, from the station to my work.
While metro passengers like Apuna support housing near the metro line, a recent lawsuit wants to put a halt on new housing developments. Fix the City, a nonprofit advocacy group, filed a lawsuit against the City of Los Angeles for a housing density plan that was approved last July. James O'Sullivan, one of Fix the City's advocates, tells us why.
The law says that if you're going to increase density, you have to make a finding based on substantial evidence that there is sufficient infrastructure and public services there to support that increase. But if they don't make that commitment, then they can't approve additional density.
O'Sullivan says city services, including fire and police in the area, will not have enough resources to support additional housing, and infrastructure like electricity and water will need to be addressed. He says that the city should make a commitment to repair the current infrastructure before building the housing.
Sometimes it's not about putting in more, it's about fixing what you already have.
We reached out to the city attorney of Los Angeles for a statement on Fix the City's lawsuit. We spoke with spokesperson Rob Wilcox from the city attorney's office.
We can't comment further at this time because we have yet to review the complaint.
No word on when that will be. For Annenberg Media, I'm Nicole Farage.
You're listening to From Where We Are. It's 16 minutes after the hour. I'm Miranda Myers.
And I'm Hala Osgar. Coming up, USC football's coaching changes, a Lincoln Heights church, and some not-so-hidden gems on campus.
After falling to 4-4 and a loss to Arizona State, USC has made some unexpected coaching changes this week. Taylor Begley has more on the story.
On Sunday night, USC football head coach Clay Helton announced he would not be making any changes until after the season. By Monday morning, Helton decided to fire offensive line coach Neil Callaway. Helton says that letting go of Callaway was one of the hardest things he's ever had to do.
The thing was, I've always said, I'm always going to do what I feel is best for the team, no matter how hard the decision is or how hard it might be. That's leadership.
That wasn't the only change Helton made. He took over play calling from offensive coordinator T. Martin. Despite being completely confident in Martin's abilities, Helton says he personally wants to be more involved in the offense.
First took the job, I knew how big the job was at USC. I had done it twice and wanted to be able to get comfortable in my own skin as a head coach. Now being third year in it, I know the groundwork, I know where everything lays, and feel extremely comfortable to be able to lead an offense as well as a team.
Both Helton and Martin say this was not the first time they talked about making a play calling change. While Martin is supportive of Helton's decisions, he admits it's been disappointing.
You have a competitor, you just want to, you've been doing a job, and you feel like you've been doing a good job at what you've been doing, and just having it taken away, that's tough, but I'm here for the team, what's best for the team, and ultimately to support my head coach.
Helton has received inside support for his decisions, and with just 4 games left, he is hoping to take the Trojans' offense to the next level. For Annenberg Media, I'm Taylor Begley.
Lacrosse is a signature sport on the East Coast, but doesn't have a significant presence further west. One California devotee is Christopher Williams. He's a lacrosse player who recently tried out for the National Lacrosse League. In his spare time, he coaches kids. In this sound portrait, we hear from Williams about why he loves lacrosse so much.
My name is Christopher Williams, and we are in Los Angeles, California, Rancho La Cienega Park. Currently, I'm just working out, shooting with my little brother. Oh, we're playing lacrosse.
Go other way.
I am a coach. I coach at a middle school, a high school, elementary school. I coach at all 3 levels. So I coach kids on the side, because it's my passion, and my goal is to be the best coach that I can be and grow the game. Now we're going to alternate with the left foot. I got involved with lacrosse via homeschooling. It was a sport that was being offered by the school that I would have went to if I weren't homeschooled. It's a game for people who want to run fast, hard, and to the whistle. It's a game that's going to challenge you mentally and physically. So it's a thinker's game. It's like playing chess. So it's a thinker's game, but at the same time, it's like soccer nonstop. You got to go, or basketball nonstop. All right, let's do a little face-off. At the rate of speed of which things happen on the field, you gotta be able to think on your feet. You know, you can't just guess. You can't just go out there and completely rely on like your intuition or like, you know, just guess. Oh, my bad. It brings people together. It lets you hash out your differences, and it allows everybody to be equal. The stick is the common equalizer. It makes everyone equal.
That sound portrait was produced by Danny McCarthy.
Three online cigarette companies are facing a new Los Angeles lawsuit. Reporter Gabby Gonta has more on a city attorney Mike Feuer's case to end the targeting of minors and e-cigarette advertisements.
The aromatic annual called tobacco.
Candy, donuts, cookies, popcorn. A teenager's favorite treat. Now in e-cigarette form.
12 and 13-year-old kids that are just like, oh, it's just like a flavored like thing and it makes me look sick, you know, and they have no idea what it's going to do to them or like that it even has nicotine in it.
USC junior Marcus Sherman smokes e-cigarettes to get away from traditional ones and has seen how teens have fallen victim to vape business marketing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my friends, like younger siblings and stuff, like the ones that are in high school, are all kind of catching on the wave, which, again, pretty unfortunate.
Vape companies crafting advertisements toward youth have been criticized since the flavors came out. But now the city of Los Angeles is taking action to stop them. City Attorney Mike Feuer's office is suing for an injunction against three online cigarette companies for business practices targeting minors.
Stop marketing your products to kids. Stop selling products online that kids can get their hands on that don't even have FDA approval. Stop it.
They claim product placement and celebrity endorsement in music videos and social media is meeting minors where they are to get them hooked early.
If the marketing weren't enough, we also allege that there are companies that make it all too easy for any kid with just a little cash and a prepaid card to acquire these products online. And that's against the law.
Feuer wants age verification procedures for anything being bought online. The three companies being sued have not immediately answered our request for comment. Feuer mentioned how he hopes they'll react.
What they should, you know what the response should be? The response should be, oh my gosh, of course we want to abide by the law. At the end of the day, you know, if the companies don't respond, as I've suggested any responsible company would, and they choose to fight this, we're in for the fight.
If the injunction is successful, Feuer hopes these companies will be an example for others in the industry. For Innenberg Media, I'm Gabby Gonta.
Far-right candidate Jair Bolsonaro won Brazil's presidential election on Sunday. The politician's attitude has caused some to compare him to President Donald Trump. Our reporter Karin Navadia has a story.
On Sunday, Brazilians celebrated in the streets when far-right politician and former army captain Jair Bolsonaro won the country's presidential runoff election. He beat his opponent Fernando Haddad of the Workers' Party with 55% of the vote. Bolsonaro's win marks a significant shift in Brazilian politics, which has been dominated by the left for more than a decade. The Workers' Party, which controlled Brazil's government for years, was caught in a large-scale corruption and money laundering scheme involving high-profile politicians like Brazil President Michel Temer. While some Brazilians say they are glad to see the Workers' Party out of power because of their unethical practices, others say they are worried about Bolsonaro's rhetoric, which included homophobic, racist, and misogynist remarks. Bolsonaro's path to the presidency was also marked by violence. Supporters of both sides carried out numerous acts of violence throughout the campaign, and Bolsonaro himself was even stabbed in September. For Annenberg Media, I'm Karin Navadia.
University tours parade by it every hour, but the guides never mention it. Scholars of all disciplines lounge across its lawn without even realizing where they are. In this Trojan Tales, Tracy McGregor tells us about the most overlooked public art space on campus.
I'm standing at the convergence of Thornton School of Music and the School of Cinematic Arts at USC. Nestled here between the buildings and under a towering sprawl of pine, sycamore, and eucalyptus trees lies the sculpture garden.
Yeah, on our back is the music school. We are going to walk over to our right.
Shrivijay Chaparala and Teague Ashcraft are computer science students moonlighting as tour guides. Until I brought it to their attention, they had no idea that they were traipsing future Trojans through a real-life sculpture garden.
You going to tell them about the sculpture garden?
I don't know anything about it. Can you tell us about the sculpture garden?
The Anna Bing Arnold Sculpture Garden was built in the early 1970s by Marsh, Smith, and Powell. It's the same architectural firm that designed USC's Taper Hall for the Humanities. Currently, there are 7 donated sculptures on display, including work by Latin American political artist Francisco Zuniga and pioneering feminist artist Mickey Benoff. Benoff's Vista for a Rare Spirit is a favorite of freshman music student Juliet Weitrack. She happened upon the abstract art piece during a recent orientation.
Like a big tube-looking thing. It stands out from all the other ones because the other ones are like people and they're made of typical sculpture material, but this one looks like yellow tinted plastic.
Jay Lizo is the sculpture lab technician at Roski School of Art and Design. He remembers being pleasantly surprised when he discovered the sculpture garden.
Public art usually tends to be somewhat not a conservative in a way, in the sense of like, you know, traditional forms of like the human body or something like that, or some kind of monument. But those, I felt like were a little bit, they were just surprising. And, I thought that was a kind of nice little gift I saw in that mom, my stroll. So yeah, I thought that was really good choices.
And there you have it.
We know about the sculpture garden on that side of campus, closer to the architecture school. I just did not realize this was one.
Next time you're roaming around campus, be sure to take a moment to really absorb the surroundings. You just never know what you've been missing. For Annenberg Media, I'm Tracy McGregor.
Lincoln Heights' Church of the Epiphany in L.A. just won tens of thousands of dollars thanks to the local and widespread support of students and community members. My co-host today, Hala Osger, has more on the story.
You may recall a story we covered a few weeks ago on the oldest operating Episcopal church in Los Angeles. Here's an update. Our community's very own Church of the Epiphany placed fourth in the Main Streets Program competition, a competition aimed at increasing public awareness and support of 20 historic sites nationwide. After the one-month competition, the architectural treasure garnered more than 74,000 votes, granting them $150,000 in preservation funds. The money will be used to repair the roof and to rehabilitate the church basement to provide community meeting spaces, healthcare services, and legal and eviction clinics. In celebration of this feat, the Church of the Epiphany welcomes everyone to a bilingual Thanksgiving Mass at 10 a.m. this Sunday, held at the winning site itself. For Annenberg Media, I'm Hala Osger.
Today's show was produced by Sabi Robinson. Selena C. Reynolds operates the board. Derek Renfro composed our theme music. Subscribe to From Where We Are on iTunes.
And follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Annenberg Media. I'm Hala Osger.
And I'm Miranda Myers. Wherever you are, we hope you'll join us again next time for From Where We Are. Thank you.
Thank you.